Hey everyone, Brian DeBrain here, and this is a unique weekly newscast here at PW Ponderings. Me and Jerome are going to record two different sections for the show today, or whenever you're listening to this. Scheduling kind of got screwed up here and there, work, social lives, what have you, so we ended up doing individual recordings on this segment. So basically, Jerome already covered basically Evolve and Ring of Honor on the Friday podcast, so I will do my part, and I watched the Super J Cup, and I watched NXT, and I watched SummerSlam, and that's basically what I'm going to talk about in this section. It was a big weekend as a whole, so, you know, I feel like we really, you know, should really talk about everything. There was a lot of important stuff that happened this weekend, a lot of crazy happenings, a lot of debuts all over the place. As we already mentioned in the Evolve thing, Cody Rhodes made his debut. It evolved this weekend, very cool to see and hear about, and reinvents himself with a new look and those new pants and everything. So I haven't had a chance to check out his matches yet, just because I've watched so much stuff in the last 3-4 days that I'm going to watch him before probably Ebola, because that'll be the best time to do it, to kind of get myself into that Cody Rhodes kind of viewing mode. So Evolve, I mean, they're having a great fucking year. What can we say? We've been talking about how great of a year they've had. Cody Rhodes debuting and having dream matches right off the bat, and then having, you know, Gargano and Ciampa's final matches coming up. It's really, really cool. Really, really special. They had another big weekend, so good for them. Check out the shows when you can. And it was just, you know, another, I don't want to say a footnote or almost forgotten, but it feels like there was just so much this past weekend that it kind of got lost in the shuffle. Even the Ring of Honor pay-per-view. I did not have a chance to watch the Ring of Honor pay-per-view. I was out Friday night. I was going crazy at, you know, on the beach in Santa Monica trying to catch a Blastoise and a Charizard. So unfortunately, my night was not filled with Ring of Honor action, but I did hear some positive things, some mixed things, but it is cool that Adam Cole's the champion again, and, you know, I kind of wanted Jay Lethal to win, but it's okay, you know. There's a plan, and it looks like Kyle O'Reilly's finally stepping up to the big time, and he's probably going to get his big... I mean, he's had Ring of Honor title shots before, but him against Adam Cole for the Ring of Honor world title, it looks like they're building up for a pay-per-view main event. Could be next month, could be Final Battle, which would be the smart thing to do. So that's really exciting, and I'm really looking forward to that. And it's pretty cool to see Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly, this feud. It's like the modern, it's kind of the newer Steen Generico for Ring of Honor, that one feud that can always go back to. So that's really cool that they're playing that up, and you kind of expected that if Adam Cole was going to win the title anyway. And with the PWG thing about pulling out and not wanting to be in the tournament, now it all makes sense, because now you don't have to have the Ring of Honor champion lose in some bullshit manner in the tournament for PWG, so it kind of works out that way. So I do want to touch on a few... Spoiler alert, everybody, spoiler alert. I did check out the TV taping results and some interesting taping results for Ring of Honor. I'm only going to talk about one spoiler, and that's Bobby Fish defeating Katsuyori Shibata for the TV title. Very shocking, but in a way, it's kind of interesting that they're all of a sudden New Japan... is pretty much pushing these young, not young, but the junior heavyweights into the heavyweight position now, which kind of leads into the J Cup, because at the J Cup, the Young Bucks retained the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Championships. They are 5-time champions. They cut a promo after they beat the Motor City Machine Guns, and they basically say, hey, you know what? What can we do? You know, we've done everything in this division, and we want to do more, and we feel like we're the best tag team in the world, and we're going to challenge the Briscoes. We're coming after you. And I was saying this, what, a year ago, after the July pay-per-view last year, like, where can the Bucks go from here in New Japan? You know, they've already reached the top of the junior tag division. There's nowhere else you can really go. They're not going to be pushed as singles in the junior division, so the next best thing is push them as heavyweight tags and make them, you know, make them the workhorses of that division, because if you look at that tag division in New Japan, it's pretty much scarce. Tonga Roa and Tama Tonga did not work out well for them. They put on some boring matches. They did not get over with the crowd. I mean, Tama Tonga to a certain extent, because, you know, he's been there for so long, but his brother did not seem to get over as much. In response to that, they put titles on the Briscoe brothers, giving that international gaijin kind of appeal to the belts like they usually do sometimes. But now... now they're throwing the Bucks in there, and it's really making me think, like, they really want to push the Bucks to re-sign. So I think this is their way of saying, okay, if we're really serious about keeping you, we're going to put you in that heavyweight tag spot and give you, you know, we're going to give you the ball and just see if you can roll, run with it, you know? And I think the Bucks are capable of doing that. I think they just got to change their style up a little bit to go, you know, bouncing around with the heavyweights in there. If you can just imagine Hanma and Makabe against the Bucks, I mean, that'll be an incredible match if you think about it. But they're going to have to slow things down to work at their level and kind of work that a little bit of that brawling style too. So it's going to be a bit of an adjustment, but I think the Briscoes are a nice transition for the Young Bucks to be in the tag division. I mean, it was already interesting enough that the Briscoes got pushed as heavyweights, considering that they're former GHC junior tag champs themselves. So it's really interesting that that line between junior heavyweight and heavyweight is getting kind of blurred in New Japan, which is pretty cool. And it's also interesting that, you know, they had Bobby Fish go over Shibata, and now Bobby Fish getting his rematch, or actually Shibata demanded a rematch, and Bobby Fish is actually getting a shot at his title now on one of the Destruction shows coming up in September. So that's pretty interesting that they're actually pushing Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly hard. Because if you look at some of these cards, speaking of New Japan, cards coming up, you know, Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish are getting the heavyweight push. They're facing, they're actually facing heavyweight job guys. I think there's a match, I believe, let me see here. Where is it? Yeah, Destruction in Tokyo, the one on September 17th. We got, listen to this, everybody, Juice Robinson against Kyle O'Reilly. Now, if you think about that, that is a big step up in terms of the quote-unquote job guys, undercard guys that, you know, Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly usually, you know, win over, go over. And this is very much a big step up, so this is kind of a test for them. And not only that, but they're being thrown to the heavyweight wolves, basically, is they got, like, multiple multi-tag matches coming up against heavyweights like Shibata, Nagata, Nakanishi. It's kind of putting them through a test, you know, if they can compete and go, you know, toe-to-toe with the heavyweights, then I think we're going to see more of a push for those two in the heavyweight division. We know that Kyle O'Reilly's kind of asked and wants to be in the heavyweight division. You can kind of see over the last couple months he's bulked up a bit, getting to around, I don't know, if I were to guess, maybe like 210, maybe closer to 215, being that he used to be like 180, 190, how small he was a couple of years ago to how, you know, how much muscular he's gotten lately. Very interesting, you know, development there. And I think that Fish and O'Reilly, along with the Bucks, are finally going to get that. I don't know. They've been pushed really hard in the juniors, but there's only so much you can do in the junior division. And you look at Kushida, speaking of, and I watched the J-Cup. So this is kind of like that transition into the J-Cup. Kushida feels like he is the ace of the division, but that tournament for the J-Cup was so disappointing. I felt it felt underwhelming. It felt like the booking was kind of like, you know, like just to make certain promotions happy and kind of like Noah, putting Noah in the spotlight, giving them the final slot with Yoshinobu Kanemura. And I thought, you know, just the tournament was just underwhelming. It didn't really deliver. There wasn't a lot of star power compared to the past tournaments. Even the one from, like, I think it was 2009 had, like, you know, Kota Ibushi, Koji Kanemono still. Who else was in? I think Yamada was in that one. Or I could be thinking of the junior league. But still, I mean, the last one they held like 6 years ago, still had a lot more star power. And I felt like this tournament was lacking that. You could have had guys like Ricochet. I mean, Volador Jr. was there. It's just he wasn't there for the first round, so they couldn't technically put him in the tournament. I felt like, you know, Volador Jr. would have been perfect to go to like the final four or even the final in this tournament to get him that spotlight. But instead, they just put him in this a Lucha Libre six-man tag that I felt was boring up until, like, the last 5 minutes. Because, you know, those style of matches in CMLL, I do watch some CMLL whenever I can. Because I think it's on, like, three different channels here in Southern California, if you have time or a cable. So if you watch, you know, their style, I mean, you really need a hot crowd that kind of knows the characters to really make the match what it is. When you're going in kind of, like, dry the way they did at the J-Cup with, like, not many people in the building, and it was already a big building, and it didn't really draw well. So that match just kind of came off, like, kind of flat to me. The junior tag title matches were pretty good. ACH really has improved. He's actually getting a better push than he is in Ring of Honor, so that's really not a surprise. But, you know, he's teaming up with a veteran in Taiji Ishimori. They went after the tag titles. It felt like Ishimori and ACH and Tsuchi Kotogi and Daisuke Harada, those four guys had more star power than like half the people in the final eight for the J-Cup, man. I felt like those guys had more of, like, a connection with the crowd. They had a much more entertaining match. Even though it was a tag match, I felt like they really, you know, they really connected in their match well. And I felt like those were the guys that should have been in the tournament. Ricochet should have been in this tournament. I felt like there was just a lot of missed opportunities. I mean, we had Ryusuke Taguchi and Kanemura. And, like, I was like, wow, this is, like, your semifinal, you know? Like, whatever, you know. Or quarterfinal, whatever it was. It just felt like it was just lacking star power, and you really needed some people for Kushida to go over and kind of make Kushida look like even more of a bigger star. I mean, this was designed to make Kushida look like the star that he is, but he could have been more of a star had there been more, you know, star power in the tournament. It just made it seem like he was, like, it was either him or Ospreay, and there was, like, no other option. And then you had guys like Taichi coming back who just had the worst possible match, I thought, with Jushin Thunder Liger. It's not even, like, he's such an awesome heel that he gets this, like, heel reaction. I feel like it's just, like, this go-away heat that the crowd doesn't want him. We don't want to watch him. He's purposely putting on bad matches that are not entertaining, and I feel like that's just, it took away from the tournament. Because the Super J-Cup is known for not just, you know, the stars and all the past great junior heavyweights, but, like, the work rate, you know. It's always been known for, like, an incredible work rate tournament, and he just shit the bed, went 3 minutes with Jushin Liger, and had a shitty performance doing that bullshit count out. And then he goes and has the 10-minute match with Kushida. And Kushida barely gets away with the victory with a small package. And just more interference. Just more bullshit. And I just felt like this was not the kind of place to have that in a J-Cup. And it just really disappointed me. And I felt like this is probably the worst J-Cup of all five or six of them. And that's even saying for, like, the 2000 one, where hardly anyone has ever seen. And that was the one with, like, you know, Sima and Jushin Liger, and, like, before even Dragon Gate, I think that was still hosted by Michinoku Pro. Even that, I felt, like, was, you know, more entertaining than this one. I just felt like with the empty crowd and the crowd not really being as into it as it could have been, and then just, you know, a lot of, you can kind of hear some of the emptiness in the building. That's what kind of sucked. And then the fact that, like, Ospreay didn't go to, like, to the Final Four. I mean, Matt Sydal is great and all, but I feel like the way that they were pushing Ospreay, he's at a higher level right now than Matt Sydal, and they kind of, like, I guess they were going for, like, the shocker kind of victory, surprise victory, but I think it just didn't really work out too well at all. I just thought this overall was just kind of disappointing. And I think, in hindsight, they should have just, I don't know, the guys they booked for the Junior League this year was just the right star power for that, and it feels like they didn't put any of that star power into the Junior Cup or the J Cup, and just, I don't know, man, just a lot of missed opportunities. An interesting card for sure. I mean, you had a lot of developments. You had the Young Bucks stepping up and challenging for the World Heavyweight Tag Team title. So in terms of, like, the storylines and advancement of storylines and that kind of thing, I guess it was good in that sense, but everything else just felt flat, uneventful, and just kind of like, it felt like, it didn't feel like a J-Cup, it just felt like a tournament that there was just happened to be, it felt like a house show tournament, you know what I mean? And it just felt so disappointing, so that was my thoughts on that. But I did watch NXT TakeOver, which I thought was, what can you say, just amazing. I didn't even think the tag title match was the best match out of the show, honestly. I thought maybe actually Joe and Nakamura. Man, I don't know what people are saying, how it was, like, slow in the beginning and whatnot. Like, I was, like, totally invested in this match from the start. The intros were incredible. I haven't seen Joe this motivated in, like, 10 years. It felt like watching the old ROH Samoa Joe title matches where he would just come out looking like a beast, ready to, like, attack and fucking just, you know, rip shit up, you know? And that's exactly that attitude he came out with. This felt like such a big-time main event. It felt like a heavyweight fight. Nakamura coming out and just being that star. It was unbelievable to see the reaction that he got. Especially with the entrance. It was one of the most amazing entrances ever. It's a WrestleMania-style entrance. You can't really, you know, it's hard to be negative on it because it was just so fucking epic and cool. Just amazing how the crowd just sings along to the theme and everything. Just, I thought this match was fantastic. I thought, like, it wasn't even match of the show, maybe. Like, okay, maybe it was, but I thought Bayley and Asuka just had almost a classic, too. I felt like the Joe Nakamura and Bayley Asuka, too, was just, like, two classic matches back-to-back. I don't know how other people feel, but I know people feel like this wasn't Nakamura's, like, best match in NXT, and I think it probably was, dude. Like, that last 10 minutes, I'm like, my God, I was so invested in the way Joe was selling his jaw. It just felt like there's always this one moment in, like, a big-time Joe title match, like the one with Austin Aries, where Austin Aries in 2004 hit that, like, crucifix driver, or that crucifix bomb, and that it changed the whole tide of the match. And I think Joe got suplexed, I believe, or something, like, it really changed the whole landscape of the match. And right after that, just Nakamura went for the kill, knee after knee, and just, you know, turned the momentum around, man. And such a fantastic match. Asuka Bailey was fantastic as well. I thought it was much better than the first match they had. Just so emotional towards the end. And you really felt like in the first match, they were still very much 50-50 babyface. But in this one, it seemed like Asuka really knew what to do in order to get the crowd more towards on the side of Bailey, because you had them more. She was acting more heelish, more aggressive to get, you know, the fans, you know, more on Bailey's side. And it totally worked, because by the end, you were totally rooting for Bailey. But by the end, you know, even when Asuka won, the crowd still respected and loved her. So just an incredible match. I thought it was almost as good as the Bailey Sasha Banks match from last year. It was almost on that level, but that really had a lot of build to that emotional moment last year with Bailey winning the title. So this year, when she lost, and, you know, it was kind of her farewell, and everyone kind of, you know, figured that out by the end. So a very cool, very awesome match. I just thought that, like, the presentation, the whole storyline going in about Bailey trying to, you know, get that redemption and win the title back and everything, only to fall short. So very cool. They didn't want to, you know, they could have easily changed their plans, basically, and just put the title back on Bailey and have her lose it a week later. But I liked that the fact that they stuck with their guns. They knew that she was, even though in the loss, she was still going to come out really hot on top. And she came out on Raw, and, you know, now she's, like, the number one women's babyface on the roster right now. So that's pretty dope. And overall, this is, God, I want to say it was better than the Dallas show. And I think it was. Definitely in the top echelon of the NXT takeovers, for sure. And I know everyone's raving about the tag title match as one of the best matches of the weekend, but man, I feel like I'm so used to seeing that awesome style of tag match from, like, the old school matches that I watch, and then you look at, like, Gargano's performance, and you can see, like, him and Ciampa are just really, like, on a different level now, knowing that they don't have to do as much to get just as much out of the crowd, and that's exactly what they did. I mean, the match ended on a freaking, leg lock, you know, what, usually it takes, like, a million epic false finishes for a Johnny Gargano or a Tommaso Ciampa match to end that way, but they really went the old-school kind of finish, worked the body part, worked it over at the end, and got the win. So that was very cool for, you know, Dash and Dawson. I don't know if they're the best tag team in the world, but they're certainly up there in terms of the, you know, style and the work rate. And they really get the crowd, like, to hate them, which is really kind of hard to do nowadays in wrestling. So you really got to credit a heel for being a heel nowadays. A true heel really doesn't get, you know, cheered, they get booed. That's what true is supposed to do. And I mean, the NXT crowd is, like, a smart crowd, and even though they know that they're so good, they still treat them like heels. So I think that's very cool and kind of special. And I really hope that, you know, that they don't get called up, Dash and Dawson, because I feel like they're perfect for that role in NXT. And if, like, they go to Raw or SmackDown, they need time to build up these awesome matches that they have. But if they go in there and wrestle, like, 5-minute matches, it's not going to work, I think. If anything, they're gonna need a little more seasoning to do that, because I just feel like the Revival are at their best when they have these, like, 20-minute tag matches, you know. But if they go in there with, like, 5, it's just gonna be really forgettable, and you really can't go on Raw every week and have 20-minute tag matches with the Revival. I mean, you could, which would be awesome, but I don't think they're gonna do that. So I think, just, you know, to play to their strengths, they should stay on NXT. And I think that's where they should just stay for now and kind of, like, be the anchor of that division and just let American Alpha do their thing on SmackDown, take over that division, and then have, like, New Day and any random bunch of tag teams you want on Raw, and just, you know, Enzo and Cass or whatever you want to do there, and that'll be that. And just kind of leave the Revival, you know, on their own in NXT, and just let them be the tag stars of that. So you got a tag team and basically in each brand that's kind of like the star of that brand. So at least that way it kind of keeps things even, I think. Because Gargano and Ciampa, it just seems like they're going to break up within the next 6 months or something. They're really building towards that, it feels, with, you know, Ciampa turning heel. And he's going to be a real, real awesome heel in NXT too. And the fact that, you know, Gargano is going to be, I think, one of the cruiserweights on Raw. So it's going to be really interesting how, you know, the rosters play out. Because I know with Ember Moon debuting, we finally got another top women's wrestler to challenge for Asuka's title. So that's going to be probably the next big match. So, I mean, NXT was terrific. They really plant the seeds for what's coming next. And they really, you know, put bookends to a lot of their storylines, like with, you know, Bayley and Nakamura's chase for the title and whatnot. And, you know, it was just an incredible show. The direction was unbelievable, I thought, in terms of, like, I mean, you look at that Bobby Roode entrance. My God, that guy came off looking more like a superstar in that one match than he ever did in TNA, I felt like. Jesus, I mean, 15,000 people singing your song. When does that ever happen? I don't think that's ever happened for him in TNA. You know, so just an incredible moment for Bobby Roode to kind of solidify himself as that guy that everyone knows he is and finally got the chance to be. So that was really cool. Man, what's his name? Cien Almas? Andre, whatever. He really should stop wearing suspenders to the ring. That's really making him look like a comedy guy. And he's not really a comedy guy. And I know he's trying to be, you know, very fashionable or whatever, but it's just not working. And he's definitely got the in-ring. I don't know, I felt like he should have just kept the mask and then built up to a mask match in WWE and then make it that much more, you know, intriguing. But they kind of went with a different route. So it's understandable. He's got that superstar look. He's just got to work on his character. So, you know, that's kind of my thoughts on him. And, I mean, six matches, perfect amount. You know, you don't want to have too much like SummerSlam, because I did watch SummerSlam as well, and that was just way, way too long. I thought AJ and Cena had the best match of the show. And I might get some really, I might get some heat for this, but I felt like Sasha and Charlotte had the best women's title match that I've ever seen. And I'm not talking about like NXT, I mean like the women's title, you know, like if you think about over the years, all the, you know, awesome women's matches for the title we've had, it's probably been the last 6 months with just Sasha and Charlotte. And this was better than the Raw match. Like, this was better than the famous Trish Lita match that headlined Raw all those years ago. And to me, that's like one of the other top women's title matches I can think of off the top of my head. Maybe a Bull Nakano, Alondra Blaze match, you know, Asha Kong, Alondra Blaze. But even these two matches from Sasha and Charlotte were better than that, and even better than the one on Raw. And I know this was kind of like botchy at the beginning, but, you know, sometimes if you can kind of work the botch into the match and kind of make it look like not a smooth... Because, like, if you look at the All Japan guys back in, like, the 90s and stuff, every time they would screw up a spot, it would just kind of, like, go within the match because it feels like these guys are just, like, bruisers, and it's only kind of natural that they would screw a move or two up and still kind of, like, you know, make it seem like a serious wrestling match. I thought the botch on the top rope or the Roderick Strong backbreaker that Charlotte tried to do looked really bad, but in hindsight, it kind of heightened the sense of drama in the match, because I felt like, oh man, is she like really hurt now? And then like it just kind of like blurred the lines a little bit, and I know she was hurt going into the match too, so that really sucked for Sasha. But I just thought this match was great. You know, like the women's title match, I thought it was just, it should not have been the second match or third match of the show. Should have been much higher, I thought. And, you know, basically, yeah, I can't think of a women's title match, a WWE women's title match, better than that. I mean, honestly, maybe like the tag title, women's tag title from back in the day, like the Jumping Bomb Angels and stuff. But yeah, this was, I thought, great, even with all the stuff at the end. I felt like this was a total like Ric Flair type of finish, you know, like the cradle or roll up out of nowhere, and all of a sudden the title's back on a Flair, you know. And it's just like I'm watching history repeat itself with the Flairs losing a title and then a month later getting the title back because they're just so good at being champions. So that was a really cool moment, I thought, even with all the stuff and the booking behind it. Cena and AJ again, wrong place on the card. It basically drained the crowd in Brooklyn after that. I mean, they had an awesome match, probably the best match on SummerSlam. I mean, I got to give Cena credit, man. I have a shirt that still says Rise Against Cena, but I don't think I'm ever going to wear that shirt because I respect him too much now, because he really improved his game in the last 2 years, stepping it up and having these amazing, amazing matches, and then having the series of matches with AJ just really, like, I mean, that whole crowd was buzzing for that match the whole time, and they really went the full, I think it was like 20-25 minutes, and there wasn't even like any, I can't even recall any like rest holds or spots like that. It just kept going and going, and they kept escalating and escalating and escalating, like the All Japan 90 style with the finishers and stuff.
just an amazing match, and really felt like AJ really was more of a star than like Dean Ambrose came out to be, even though Dean Ambrose seems to be the top draw in like the house shows right now, from what I've read and heard. But still, like, AJ seems to be the guy. Like, and there, spoiler alert, well, not really spoiler, by the time this is out, they already announced it, it's AJ Styles and Ambrose. I think you gotta go with AJ. Like, you gotta strike while the iron's hot, and I think him as champion going into SummerSlam, or going into WrestleMania, is your best option. You build him up, and you probably build up another challenger, maybe have Cena come back or something like that. I don't know, but I feel like he should be the guy in your world title picture for WrestleMania on the SmackDown brand. And, you know, all the shit aside from what the Universal title looked like and all the funny, I mean, I found the chance funny. And sometimes to me, it's like, hey, you paid all that money, you get to say whatever the fuck you want. You know, like, I've heard worse chants at other places, you know, but it's freedom of speech. And freedom of speech, like, here in America, sad to say, is like the whole, you know, First Amendment thing. It protects speech you hate or may not like. And we all don't agree on everything, but I wouldn't have said the stuff there, you know. If I was in the crowd, I would have just been, like, laughing the whole time. But, hey, it is what it is. You got a very demanding crowd, and you got to appeal to your demanding crowd that, you know, pays you to be there. You basically, it's, you're relying on the crowd's money to be there. So I feel like you got to listen to the crowd on what they want. And I know it's the whole branding thing, but it really just came off, like, lazy. And I think that's what the disappointment and the anger was coming from. It was just, like, the laziness of it. And so, like, they didn't really put much thought into designing a universal, quote-unquote, championship. Not even getting creative with it. They just put the logo on there like the other belt, and that was that. So I think that's the frustration and the disappointment that the fans were feeling, and it's totally understandable. But at the same time, I felt like Balor and Rollins still had, like, this big-time main event, and it felt like a big-time main event, you know? More so than Ambrose and Ziggler, for sure, like, tenfold, you know? I felt like, by the end, the crowd was just really into this match, and it felt like an important match. And, man, when Balor won, I was just in shock. I did not see that coming. I was just like, wow, they're finally pushing a guy that everyone loves, and he's going to be the guy, you know? And everyone loves him, and he does great work, and he talks well. And the next day, he's on Good Morning America, and the next thing you know, you hear that he's going to need soldiery, and it's just like, fuck. Oh, man, it was just so disappointing. I had flashes of Daniel Bryan's title reign again, and just saw, you know, just sadness and stuff. But I couldn't help but think, like, okay, well, at least we now know who's going to win the Royal Rumble, because that is the smartest thing to do. Like, you already put this guy on top on the Raw brand. So the best thing to do, make him come out number 30 as the Demon at the Royal Rumble, have him win it, and then you have Seth just be the Universal Champion from here until Mania, and you build up that rematch. You know, you really build that up, because now it's not just for the title, it's revenge. Like, you took me out, I was the champion, you took me out, you hurt me, and now I'm here to win the title back, and not only that, I'm here to hurt you. And I think that's just a perfect storyline that kind of, like, in hindsight, it'll play out really well in the story. You know, like, it may be a blessing in disguise, because you, at the same time, it's like, okay, they're really pushing this guy fast, and anytime they do that, the crowd sometimes doesn't react nicely to it, you know. But in this case, because I guess he's got that history with NXT, and, you know, a lot of the TV crowd watches NXT, it seems like, and they're really familiar, especially that Brooklyn crowd. But that's kind of like a given. So it was just amazing to watch him be on top, like, right off the bat, and beating Roman and beating Seth. And that's two members of the Shield that are usually protected heavily, and he beat them both. So just amazing. And maybe in hindsight, it'll work out, because him winning the Rumble would probably be the smart move to do. So yeah. And then what else? Brock and Orton was kind of boring, I thought. It just seemed like just a random quote unquote dream match that kind of had no consequences afterward. It was just like, we need a main event, here's the main event, and let's just have, like, no, you know, nothing important after, like, post. I mean, it just seems like they booked that finish just because they don't want to pin both, either guy. So it's understandable, but at the same time, like, I felt like you should have just put Balor and Seth last, because at least that way, that felt like it had consequences going into Raw the next night, not just some random one-on-one Brock Lesnar match that has no effect on anything afterward, because he's going to be gone. So that's what it kind of felt like to me, and I know that's kind of how it feels with a lot of Brock's matches, but, you know, usually there's some kind of, like, follow-up afterward, and there was not really, like, a follow-up to this. Just kind of weird. I mean, I don't know how Randy Orton's going to be perceived afterward. I know it seems like he's going to be feuding with Bray Wyatt, which is going to be interesting, because that could be boring as hell, or it could have some interesting promos, but I just kind of felt like Randy Orton kind of, like, didn't... Kind of looks not as much of a top star now, I feel like. He just kind of got manhandled, and I think the most he did was, like, an RKO on the table, maybe an RKO in the ring, but it only went, like, 10 minutes. It wasn't that, like, buzzworthy of a main event. It just felt like another match from the show, you know? So, in terms of that, I felt like SummerSlam was just had these high points and then these low points, you know? And I just felt like if you would have just cut out half that stuff, the old school traditional 3-hour SummerSlam, you would have had an awesome SummerSlam. But because they just had to add all this extra stuff, it was just like, oh, Jesus, okay, we get it. So basically, out of 10, probably, I'd probably give SummerSlam like a 7.5, maybe a 7. But it could have been easily a 9 with the two matches that I raved about with the women's title match and the Cena-AJ style match. And I guess the number 3 match on the card for me would be Seth Rollins and Finn Balor, which was excellent as well. But just, again, just so many matches and so much crap in between, it just didn't feel like a consistent show. So that's kind of the downside of having, like, these 4-hour mega events, just trying to fill up the card. But then it's just like, oh, these other matches bring it down. So kind of hope they kind of change that next year, go back to, like, maybe do, like, a 3.5-hour, you know? Because they did have the overrun as well, so it was, like, 4 hours, you know, and 10 minutes or whatever, plus the 2-hour pre-show, which I skipped, so... That's my perspective on SummerSlam, and I kind of try to check out the monthly pay-per-views. I don't watch Raw. I follow Raw on Twitter. I read the SmackDown results. I basically just watch Raw and SmackDown through GIFs now. So yeah, that's pretty much my last 3-4 days of, you know, watching wrestling. A lot of highs, a lot of lows, but a lot of awesomeness when it was pretty high with, like, Joe and Nakamura and the Bayley Oscar match, the NXT title match, tag title match, and, you know, Cena AJ and all the good stuff. So a lot of great stuff, a lot of boring stuff, but still, I mean, that wasn't even half the wrestling that weekend. You still had 2 Evolve shows. Plus, I'm pretty sure I'm forgetting something else. I think there was an AEW show. I may be wrong on that. It may be coming up this week. I think it is this week. What am I talking about? But still, like, they sold out another AEW, talking about them, just really quick. They sold out another show in, like, 4 or 5 minutes, getting flack from their fans on Twitter about how they couldn't get a ticket, and now it's, like, they're in that PWG situation where they're trying to please everybody, but also try to be the hot product, and just selling out really quick. And now, I guess, if the fans push hard enough, you never know, they could be forced to, like, find another venue, but I highly doubt that, because that venue is too perfect for them. So... great for AEW, man. They're on a hot streak right now, and, you know, continuing that with another sold-out show, building up to Sierra Miedo. Sorry, I don't speak Spanish at all. I don't have an accent for it. I mean, I look like I speak Spanish, but I don't, believe me. Pentagon Jr., kind of the star of the AEW right now with the AEW heavyweight title, so exciting stuff there. Just a lot of stuff going on, so... that's pretty much in terms of this weekend. I know there was a lot to cover. I even think there was a few independent shows here and there, but I believe Jerome will cover that in his part of the newscast with all the detailed results and all the weekend stuff and all the weekend happenings. So, but we just wanted to, you know, have a lot of perspective on all the different stuff this weekend. I mean, I didn't even have a chance to watch the Conor McGregor fight, which is the third time that's happened. It's like every time there's a Conor fight, I'm either at a PWG show or this time I was at my cousin's wedding reception, which is cool because... You know, open bar for 2 hours really gets you, you know, fucked up on a Saturday night. So that was my Saturday night. So I didn't even watch the J Cup until, like, Monday. But, yeah, just so much going on. A lot to watch still. And on top of that, yesterday I got the cards. The cards came in, everybody. So thank you to Chris from Arkansas, at one to follow on Twitter. An amazing person. He made my dreams come true. My dreams are reality now because of him, and now I have all these sets of cards that I'm going to hand out at the show. Hit me up on Twitter. Actually, you know what? Now that I think about it, I think I'm just going to make a new Gmail. Since we got time, on next week's newscast when we go a little bit more, because it's a week away. Right now it's a week and a half away from Battle of Los Angeles. When we record again next week, we're going to be a little less than a week away. So I think on next week's newscast, I'll have an email set up where you can email me about reserving a set. I have about 160 sets to give out. Maybe 150. I have to recalculate some things. But I know I guaranteed some sets already. And, you know, I hooked up some people. So depending on the list and the response, I may have extra sets to ship out. I probably will. I'll probably reserve like 100 or 100 for the live crowd and maybe like 50 for shipping out or something like that. But next week I'll have an email, a Gmail that you can email me at, and then I'll just, because that way I can keep it separate and just kind of like go to that one particular email and know what to do already and not have to go through my email or whatnot or my DMs to make things easier for me. So again, thank you for the support and all the positivity, and I'm glad I can do it for you guys, who I guess I'm blowing people's minds, so that's pretty awesome. So yeah, there's that. And, you know, like I said, we're going to have a small... I mean, we already had that PWG Gorilla Cast last month, so you kind of have an idea of what Bola's going to be like anyway. It's been hyped up for a month. Everything's been announced. So we'll kind of go over the final details next week on the newscast and maybe even talk about giving away a set for free where you don't have to pay for the shipping. Because basically, the sets are free. You just got to pay the shipping. So we might put together a little contest or something like that, so that way we give a set out for free for you, the fans. And we'll even include some of the secret cards that I only told a few people about. And yes, there are secret cards. We'll get into more details next week, but very much a Pokemon kind of a mood, so it kind of made sense to do it. So hit me up on Twitter if you want to follow me or chat with me or talk about pop culture, wrestling, or stupid bullshit on Twitter. Brian DeBrain, D-A, not the... And, you know, if you want some graphic design work done, hit me up. Wow, went almost 40 minutes, 35 minutes, whatever. That's pretty cool. So, like I said, there was a lot going on this weekend. I just felt like even though we couldn't record at the same time, we had to record something because there's just so much going on. I watched certain things, Jerome watched certain things, so we wanted to give you that perspective on everything. So, that's it, man. Quite the weekend, for sure. So, thank you for listening. I'm either going to end the show or we're going to cut back to Jerome. So either way, thank you for listening and peace.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to my portion of the weekly newscast, which is just going to be me by myself. My name is Jerome Cusan. I am the senior editor of this website, co-founder, all that good stuff, and I am here by myself to discuss SummerSlam weekend, and I will be taking your questions in this segment. I am not someone who likes doing these podcasts alone. I like to interact and talk with people, so just talking to myself in a room with a microphone in front of me is just really strange, and I am definitely not the type of person who could do a five-hour radio show and just banter about, because that is not me at all. But I do want to talk about what everybody has been discussing over the last few days, and that is SummerSlam weekend, which I have to tell you, there's some wrestling weekends where I'm really excited to watch more wrestling and to watch more product. I was exhausted by the end of SummerSlam weekend, and I watched two Evolve shows, a Ring of Honor show, NXT, and the 15-hour SummerSlam, and about halfway through SummerSlam, I hit a wall and just did not want to watch any more wrestling, and there is no doubt that my enjoyment of SummerSlam was hurt by this hitting the wall, and there is also no doubt that WWE contributed to me hitting the wall. But I do not want to, you know, go show by show, because that's going to be really boring. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to bring back a gimmick that I like to incorporate on my Twitter account as well as in some of my reviews. The old pour one out and pop the champagne. So we're going to start things off, unfortunately, on a negative note by first the top five wrestlers who I am pouring one out for on this here podcast. Number five is Brock Lesnar. Not for the reason that people think. I know there are a lot of people that think Brock Lesnar took liberties with Randy Orton. Not for a single second do I think he took any liberties. I'm firmly convinced that Brock Lesnar and Randy Orton went out there and did exactly what they were told to do and what was expected of them. So that is of no concern to me. My biggest problem with Brock Lesnar is that he is just a terrible person. He is not a guy who is interested in having good matches anymore. And really, with the way WWE books him, you partially can't blame him. But it just seems to me that Brock Lesnar is not somebody who respects this business at all. And one of the things, one of the hallmarks of pro wrestling that I've been told by so many people is to have respect for opponents and respect for the business. And to me, it just seems like Brock Lesnar has neither at this point. He is a guy that is obviously just in search of a paycheck. And while I certainly do not begrudge anyone who's mostly interested in a paycheck, I mean, we all have to pay our bills, and ultimately, we have to do what's best for us. And, you know, obviously, Brock Lesnar has convinced the UFC and WWE that he is a draw when there is absolutely no evidence that suggests, particularly in WWE's case, that he is anything but. So, for me, Brock Lesnar had to go on this list, even if it was at number 5, just because I don't think he's putting on compelling matches anymore, and I think he is an enormous financial albatross on WWE at this point. So for me, Brock Lesnar was one of the clear lowlights of SummerSlam weekend. Let's go to another lowlight. That would be number 4, and that would be Roman Reigns. I don't know what WWE was trying to accomplish with Roman Reigns and Rusev in that semi-main event, but oh boy, did that come across so poorly. And I think WWE's representation of heels and babyfaces certainly needs to be called into question. When you look at the way that Rusev has behaved, defending the honor of his beautiful wife, and his wife, you know, she is someone who stands up for herself, and Roman Reigns just continually goes out and beats up poor Rusev, is the first one to initiate using a chair when Rusev is coming and trying to recover from an injury. Roman Reigns comes back and attacks him. I don't know how much of this is on Roman Reigns, but it was legitimately one of the worst segments of SummerSlam that I saw. And this was a 4-hour show, so that should tell you a lot. Just absolutely pointless. And Roman Reigns is a guy who just does not have any confidence right now, and it shows. He has no idea where he's going as a character, as a performer. He is someone that I think can have really great matches, and, you know, I'm not one of those people who says that, oh, he's a super worker, but I'm also not the type of person who says he's the drizzling shits. To me, he falls somewhere in between, and I think that's about where he belongs, is somewhere in between the undercard and the upper card at this point. And until Roman Reigns finds his confidence, then he is not someone that WWE is going to be able to rely on. And I think the fading ratings sort of reflect so much of what WWE's problems are at this point. And WWE has a lot of problems. Obviously, they're a financially stable company. They're not going to be shutting down in the next year or two, but there are certainly some signs with all the numerous injuries that they have to deal with moving forward, as well as Roman Reigns being their guy but not really being over. That is a major problem for them. Number 3 is Shinsuke Nakamura. I get that he's a guy that only tries 3 or 4 times a year, but I was really hoping that NXT TakeOver Back to Brooklyn was going to be one of those times. I guess nobody told him that the Barclays Center was the Tokyo Dome. I certainly would have at least considered telling him that, so that maybe he would go out there and try. You know, I saw Dave Meltzer, and I'm going to have a question about this a little bit later. Dave Meltzer gave this 4.25 stars. I'm firmly convinced that the man is blind after watching that. Legitimately, my rating for that match would be somewhere between 2 and 2.5 stars. I wouldn't think about it too hard, but I just was not a fan of the main event. And I did not think Nakamura was particularly good. Samoa Joe obviously wasn't great shakes either. But Nakamura is a guy who I really want to like, because obviously when he goes out there, I mean, Sami Zayn is a perfect example. He's a guy who is capable of going out there and having that 5-star match. And, you know, even when I was reviewing the G1 last year, you know, those performances against Okada and Tanahashi, and even against AJ Styles, you know that this guy can be a great wrestler. what he wants to be. And one of my biggest problems with a guy like that is that when you want to be a wrestler, when you want to be a great wrestler, just is not good enough. Especially on these shows, you have to be there. And as the ambassador for NXT now, Nakamura's got to be going out there every night and giving it his all. And if he's not going to do that, then this NXT title reign is just not going to be very good. I know that there are some people who were not the biggest fans of Finn Balor, but the one thing that you could always say about Finn Balor is that he went out there and busted his ass and gave it every single night and every single takeover. Can you think of a single takeover match where he did not deliver at least a good to great match? If not, you know, maybe not a match of the year contender, but certainly that would something that could at least be considered main event worthy. So I want to shift gears away from the WWE NXT portion of SummerSlam weekend and talk about someone who, for Evolve Wrestling, number two was Timothy Thatcher. And what else needs to be said? I think Timothy Thatcher is in a similar boat as Roman Reigns in that he is showing no signs of improvement. He is not changing his game. He is not someone who is going out there and is adding things, adding nuance to what he does. And it sucks because Timothy Thatcher is a guy that I want to like. I want to like Timothy Thatcher because of the fact that he is not like every other wrestler. He is so unique. He doesn't, you know, he's a guy who doesn't run the ropes. He's a guy who is going to go out there and have a very specific style of match. And, you know, there are times when it works out, when he is with the right opponent, when he is in the ring with a Johnny Gargano or a Zack Sabre or a Chris Hero or a Matt Riddle, like we saw this past weekend, then it's going to work. But when he goes out there and has the kind of match he does with Drew Gulak, and I will point out, Drew Gulak and Timothy Thatcher had a match at WrestleMania weekend a couple of years ago that I once gave 4.25 stars. That was a CZW world title match, and that was a match that obviously did not have the level of expectation that an Evolve title match does. But I would like to say that, you know, I have been someone who was championing Timothy Thatcher at one point, and the bloom was off the rose for me. And so much of that is because of the things that I mentioned, the fact that he's not improving his game, the fact that he's not going out there and adapting himself more to what fans want. And at the end of the day, when it comes to pro wrestling, if you are not giving what the fans want, then you are a failure. And it sucks to say that because, you know, I am a believer that diversity in wrestling is good and that not every match should be the same. But unfortunately, Timothy Thatcher is the guy who continues to have basically the same kind of match and has not adapted, and I don't think is wrestling with any confidence either. So in a lot of ways, I think that Thatcher and Reigns are in the same boat. Now, you've heard Timothy Thatcher, Shinsuke Nakamura. Who could number one possibly be? For me, it's someone who, to me, it wasn't just about having a bad match, because I actually liked Charlotte and Sasha Banks, but for my money, there is nobody who is more reckless and unsafe. Forget Brock Lesnar, forget Seth Rollins, than Charlotte. Sasha Banks apparently has back injuries. You know, there's been a lot of teases on Twitter about what that means, and apparently surgery is not going to be required, and she's going to be back sooner than expected. But if you're someone who is wrestling, if you're wrestling someone with a bad back, how do you not go out of your way to protect that person? And from the time the bell rang to the time the match ended, it did not seem like Charlotte was interested in protecting Sasha. There was a very dangerous spot. I guess what was supposed to be a backdrop on the top turnbuckle. Not quite sure what they were going for, but Sasha just landed right on her neck, and it looked brutal. And there were a couple of other very dangerous spots, and Charlotte was just all over the place. And I just thought the way that she wrestled that match was pretty pretty reckless. And she is number one on my list, deservedly so. Even more so, you know, Thatcher had a bad match. Shinsuke Nakamura didn't try. Roman Reigns is having confidence issues. But for me, Charlotte was just plain reckless, and that is why She is number one on my list. So for all of these people, just pour one out. So now we're going to go on the other side. We're going to pop some champagne. And number five is Chikara. Yes, I'm giving it to a whole company, not just a single wrestler. Chikara was able to run a successful, quote-unquote, network special with no problems. Apparently everything went smoothly. And for them, this is obviously great news. And when you add to this, Chikara is going to be a part of WrestleMania weekend next year proper. Chikara, I think, is trying to get back into people's good graces. Obviously, they have been surrounded by controversy ever since their controversial shutdown back in June of 2013. Hopefully, this is a sign that Chikara is going to come back in full in force. And this is a positive sign because I think streaming networks are where it's at. I think Chikara has the best streaming network in independent wrestling right now. And I think just with the quality of the catalog that they have and the years of history behind them, Chikaratopia is the best place to watch independent wrestling and to follow an independent wrestling. Because you can literally go back for $7.99 and go back and watch every single Chikara show. And I am a firm believer that these network specials are going to be a regular feature. I think I predicted on a podcast that they would actually go weekly at some point. I am still convinced that they are going to, if not weekly, that they're going to try to do something either bi-weekly or monthly. And they are going to be really out there putting their footage out because that's what they have to do. You see it with the WWE Network. You see it with Netflix and Hulu and Amazon Prime. The only way that you are going to drive and get new subscribers is by putting as much new content on your streaming site as possible. So for all of these reasons, Chikara gets to pop the champagne based on their SummerSlam Sunday. Number four, let's go to John Cena. John Cena had an unbelievable match against AJ Styles. I would say Cena and Styles was easily the best match of the entire weekend. And John Cena is a guy who does not have to go out there and try. He could very easily pull a Shinsuke Nakamura and just not put in the effort. But he put over AJ Styles clean as a sheet in what was an unbelievable back-and-forth match. And I know that there are some people who did not like sort of the indiness of it, some of the kickouts and whatnot, but that's... And everybody is certainly entitled to their opinion. But for me, AJ Styles, who also was very, very strong in this match. I don't want to take anything away. But specifically, you know, John Cena is coming to a point in his career when he's going to be a part-timer. You know, he is not going to play as much of a factor in WWE moving forward. However, he is someone who can still go out there and have just as good a match as anybody in the world. And if you are someone who boos John Cena, you need to stop. Because this is a guy who deserves your respect. And as far as I'm concerned, this is a guy who should be regarded as an all-time great. Number three is the unanimous Rookie of the Year selection. At least he better be for the Wrestling Observer. Matt Riddle, I don't know what else you can say about this guy that hasn't been said by a million people. In this era of social media and sort of everybody exposing their hot takes, so much has been said about Matt Riddle, but all I can say is that he is an unbelievable talent, and he deserves every single accolade that he gets. He should be the Evolved Champion as far as I'm concerned. An audible should have been called. Storylines should have been changed. Matt Riddle should absolutely be the Evolved Champion. Why they are not running with the hot hand is inexplicable to me. Matt Riddle, I think, easily had the two best matches on each Evolved show, and it is a testament to his charisma, his wrestling ability, his selling. This guy can basically do anything. He can play heel, he can play babyface, and his character really doesn't change all that much when he switches between both. So for me, I really think that Matt Riddle is, if you haven't seen Matt Riddle live, you really need to. You need to go out of your way to do that and see Matt Riddle live. If you have never seen him wrestle, then obviously you've got to go to WWNLive.com, watch his Evolve work, buy the Scenic City Invitational on video on demand or on DVD. Definitely do that because this is a very special talent. Number two and number one are both from NXT. Number two is The Revival. Dash Wilder, Scott Dawson. I think this is the tag team of the year. You know, I'm a firm believer that Matt Riddle is the rookie of the year and The Revival are the tag team of the year. They put another unbelievable match, probably the best match of NXT. My second favorite match of the entire weekend against Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa. And I look at the body of work that they've put together. Wrestling against American Alpha, legitimately one of the best tag team matches I've ever seen, was the Revival American Alpha match from the June NXT TakeOver. I need to go back and watch that match again, actually, because I think it's just amazing to see what those two teams were able to do. And the Revival have been very consistent on television, at the house shows, on these NXT TakeOver specials. This is a special duo, and to be able to see these guys on a regular basis is great. And it's not just that they're great wrestlers, but they're also great characters. They're great as heels. They really know how to keep the crowd against them. You know, I think it would be really easy for them to get cheered and start playing to those cheers, but these guys are pure heels. And, you know, I think there are some people who use old school, you know, in an almost derogatory way, but I think the Revival have proven that going old school does not necessarily mean just grabbing a chin lock and resting for 5 minutes. They are able to incorporate new school and old school together, and I think they are absolutely one of the best tag teams in the world right now. And again, I feel that their candidacy as tag team of the year should be unanimous because I think they're great. So my number one, I think people are going to be surprised by my number one, but it is also a woman. It is not Sasha Banks or Charlotte. It's Asuka. I think Asuka has been incredibly underrated in her role. Obviously, Bayley is a tremendous female wrestler, and I don't want to take anything away from her. So I hope she does extremely well. If she is booked correctly, Bayley is the type of woman who can change the face of WWE. And I'm not saying that as a pejorative. I'm saying that in all sincerity. She can bring in an entirely new audience to watching WWE, and that would be, of course, young girls ages, say, 3 to 10. She is someone that is well worth investing time into, and I hope if WWE screws her up, then they should just be embarrassed, because Bayley is not only someone who can appeal to that demographic, but Bayley is also an incredible performer. She was able to carry so many lesser workers last year, the Alexa Blisses, who, you know, I think Alexa Bliss has a lot of potential, but she's obviously not anywhere close to the level of a Bayley or Sasha Banks. Go rewatch that match with Eva Marie. Eva Marie is not a good talent in the ring, and obviously they used some booking shortcuts in that match, but Bayley was able to get something out of her that I don't think literally anyone else on the WWE roster can do, because Eva Marie, despite the gimmick being great, her in-ring talent has a lot to be desired. So spent a lot of time talking about Bayley and haven't talked about Asuka. But when you go back and you watch Asuka's early appearances and you compare them to now, I think you have seen a lot of character development. You know, I think she started off as basically a babyface, and she has gotten more cocky. She's gotten more aggressive. She's gotten more and more heelish as the days and the months have worn on. She is undefeated in NXT. You look at her takeover performances, I would argue that she has had, you know, 3.5, 4-star matches every single time out, with the exception of Dana Brooke. But all I can say is good for her, and I am putting her at number one because I think she deserves a lot more due than she is getting. And that's, you know, I don't think people are out there saying, oh, Asuka's terrible or anything like that. But I don't think people are appreciating how good Asuka has been since she started in NXT. And, you know, when I went to Shimmer shows, one of the people that I was most excited in seeing on a regular basis was Kana. And obviously that is who Asuka is now. And I just think that she is one of the very, very best performers out there. And, for my money, it doesn't get any better than watching Asuka in the ring with Bayley, or Asuka getting in the ring with anyone, really. And I am very, very excited by the prospect of her hopefully getting to feud with her former tag team partner in Ember Moon. So, no, that was Lufisto, who was her tag team partner. I really want to see Asuka versus Ember Moon. If not in December, then for sure at WrestleMania weekend. But Asuka is number one. So you can pop the champagne for all five of those wrestlers. Before I go on to answering some questions, I want to get some plugs. Please make sure to follow me, twitter.com/JeromePWPEditor. You can follow us on our website, twitter.com/PWPonderings. And, of course, if you would like to support us, please leave a 4- or 5-star review on Stitcher and iTunes, wherever you listen to your podcasts. It does help us allow people to discover what we do here at Pro Wrestling Ponderings. If you can also go and support us by purchasing a shirt on our T-shirt store at Redbubble. You can find the link at pwponderings.com. You can also go to High Spots as well as Amazon. Click on those links on pwponderings.com. Get your merchandise. I know that I've been getting a ton of stuff on Amazon and using the PW Ponderings link because I'm moving to China, so there's a lot of stuff that I need to be purchasing, and I'm doing it through the Amazon link on PW Ponderings. So with all that being said, let's get to some of the questions. I'm going to answer them out of order because there's some very specific things that I want to say at the end. So, the first question comes to me from Auscee, I believe. It's A-U-S-C-E-E-C-E-E. She asks, will Dave Meltzer ever be called up for his bias, in her opinion? It seems towards people who are sources to him. So, this is what I'm going to say about Dave Meltzer. I think there was a time when Dave Meltzer was and should be regarded as the greatest wrestling journalist of all time. That has already been clinched by Mr. Meltzer. Even though he did not invent the 5-star rating system, it is something that we all use today. And that all that credit goes, for better or for worse, again, to Dave Meltzer for wrestling star ratings. Dave Meltzer is someone who, in 1983, he literally was the source for independent for wrestling journalism. There was nobody else except for the wrestling magazines, and those were very K-5 friendly. So there was a point when Dave Meltzer was pretty much the only person that could be relied on for news and for information about the business. People within the business would use Dave Meltzer to learn about what was going on in other territories. In the year 2016, things have changed a great deal. Pro wrestling coverage is ubiquitous. For God's sakes, ESPN is now covering pro wrestling. And I don't think that Dave Meltzer does as good of a job covering the sport as he once did. The problem is covering pro wrestling and covering UFC are both full-time jobs, and you cannot do both. No reasonable human being can do both. And I think that partly pro wrestling coverage in particular, and maybe this is just my bias because I'm not a UFC or MMA fan, but I think his pro wrestling coverage has suffered. And the fact that he does not seem to have the quality of sources that he once did. I mean, I can tell you from firsthand experience that there are a lot of people who I interact with on a regular basis on the Twitter machine who have just as good of resources or are able to talk to people and, you know, give inside scoops with a Z just as good as Dave Meltzer does. And there are times that they are ahead of the game in reporting things, and I think that is a huge problem. I think Meltzer gets called out a lot by people. Sometimes it's fair. I don't think it's fair. But I think the point of the what is most important to me is that Dave Meltzer is not the only voice that matters in pro wrestling journalism anymore. And I think that is a huge change. There's no doubt in my mind that Dave Meltzer's place in history is already set in stone. But at this point, I think there are other places where you can get reliable, quality pro wrestling journalism that is not the Wrestling Observer. In some cases, you could find better material on Twitter. So another question from @RichLaconi. the Ring of Honor writer. And if you are not reading his stuff, then you absolutely should be. PWPonderings.com. He does the Ring of Honor television reviews. He reviews the house shows. And he most recently did a review of Death Before Dishonor. Not to mention, he is the host of the Podcast of Honor. So definitely go check that out if you get a chance. And listen to what Rich had to say about all things Ring of Honor. What does he ask? How does the partnership with CMLL affect ROH's product? I am hopeful that it affects it in a positive way. Because, obviously, I think Ring of Honor needs to diversify their products. I think Lucha has certainly been a very popular way for independent wrestling companies to draw. I think AEW in particular has really done an incredible job of using Phoenix and Drago and Pentagon Jr. To draw in those extra fans and to be able to draw 600-700 people to their shows. I mean, this is a company that was once struggling to draw 200 people, and now they're able to sell a Thursday night show in less than 3.5-4 hours. So part of that has to do with the Lucha wrestlers. I hope that CMLL has a positive effect. Certainly, if Ring of Honor wants to diversify its audience, I think that's going to help. I think that obviously with the Hispanic population being the fastest rising population in the United States, any wrestling company who's not trying to draw more Hispanic people into their shows, I think they are making a huge mistake. And I mentioned AEW. I think AIW is also doing a lot of the same things. They're maybe not using as many of the known wrestlers, but you know, they're also incorporating the Flamitas, the Laredo Kids, and so many others. So you can see the trend that is going on across the independent wrestling scene of using some of these luchadors to help draw in fans, whether it's Hispanic fans or whether it's just fans of lucha in general who happen to be of another race. So I think Ring of Honor is smart to realize that and incorporate CMLL wrestlers into their storylines, just like it's smart of them to sign Marty Scurll and Will Ospreay. I think Ring of Honor, if they are to survive, I think they have to diversify their audience. And bringing in CMLL wrestlers will hopefully do that for them. But how will it affect the product? I ultimately don't know. A lot of that depends on who is doing the booking and a lot of that stuff. I think Death Before Dishonor was a step up in a lot of ways from some of the booking on prior Ring of Honor shows. But they have a talent problem right now. And, you know, using New Japan guys and CMLL guys is all well and good, but they have to start developing other talents who are not of New Japan or CMLL variety. And if they don't do that, then they're going to have a really hard time staying relevant moving forward. So one of the other questions that I was asked, at VAGent Mike, go support Nova Wrestling, everybody. He asked me, how do I still put up with Kevin Ford? I don't know. How do I put up with Kevin Ford? Lots of alcohol, no doubt, gets drunk every time I think about talking to Kevin Ford. That's a joke, everyone. Kevin Ford, I think it's funny that I was asked about this because this is something that I think about quite often. I don't think a lot of people realize just how well Kevin Ford, Chris GST, and I actually get along. Running a wrestling website obviously is very difficult, and with us living in three different parts of the country and the three of us are slightly different personality-wise, but I think people would be very surprised at how few arguments and disputes that we have had over the years. In the 7.5 years, God almighty, that's a long time, in the 7.5 years that we have been doing this website, I think the number of actual, like, arguments that we have had is in the single digits. And in none of those cases do I think those arguments affected the website in any way. I mean, there are certainly times that we have conversations about how we can make the website better and stuff like that. But like I said, argument-wise, I think we're in the single digits. And that is pretty amazing when you think about, we've been doing this for 7 years, and if there's anything that pro wrestling has taught me is that everybody involved is a bunch of drama. They love the drama, but Kevin, Chris, and I don't really get involved with that. So you should never expect to hear a podcast where Kevin, Chris, and I talk about pro wrestling ponderings drama, because there is actually very little of it. I know some wrestling companies like to have podcasts about drama, but that's neither here nor there. So the final question, what do you want to make sure you do before you go to China? And this comes from at K413. So for those who don't know, I am going to be moving to a city in central China in a couple of weeks. And obviously, this is a very big deal for me. So basically, what's going to be happening is that on September the 2nd, I'm going to Las Vegas with some family members. And then on Tuesday, September the 6th, I'm flying out of Los Angeles, and I'm going to Shanghai. And then I'm going from Shanghai to Shaoxing via car. And I will be in China for 4 months. I will come back to Chicago for a month, and then I fly back to China again in February. So that is what I'm going to be doing. Just to answer any immediate questions, I don't know how that is going to affect my involvement with the website. That is to be determined at this point. I don't know what level of internet access I'm going to have. Obviously, China is a country known for censoring places like Google, Twitter, and Facebook. There are certainly ways around it, but I have to make sure that those ways around it actually work. So at this point, I do not know how my involvement with the website will be affected. It is certainly my hope that I can continue to review shows and do podcasts, but with the time difference and all that stuff, that's going to make podcasting very difficult. But obviously, with show reviews, that can still be done. But again, that is all to be determined. I'm making no promises nor commitments at this point. One of the things that I'm doing, like I said, I'm only leaving really for 4 months at a time, and you know, I have that month break, so it's not like I'm leaving forever. But I think the things that I've been trying to do these last few weeks is, you know, spend as much time with friends and family as possible. That has been very, very important to me. You know, I had my farewell party a couple of weeks ago. I'm going to be spending additional time with some friends on Friday. I am going to be doing some things Thursday night as well. The thing that I'm most happy about, actually, is I'm glad that my last wrestling show, literally the night before I leave, the last wrestling show that I will be going to before I leave for China is at the Berwyn Eagles Club, and it is an AEW show. And that makes me extremely happy that I'm able to do that, because Berwyn has sort of been a wrestling home for me. Obviously, it's a place where I watched AEW for so long. You know, I've done commentary in that building. I've seen Shimmer in that building. I've seen Kevin Steen win the AEW title in that building. I've seen so much go on. And for that to be my last wrestling show before I leave is really awesome and amazing. And now, obviously, AEW didn't plan it that way for it to be my last show, but I am incredibly grateful and happy that it is. So Thursday, September the 1st, that will be my last show for a few months, possibly a year. It's not going to be my last show ever. Certainly, when I come back in the summer next year, I will be at AEW shows in June, July, August, possibly September. We'll see. So it's not like it's my last show forever. You know, I'm not doing a farewell tour and then going to NXT never to be seen again. I will certainly be seen again at an AEW show next year at some point. But, you know, obviously this is going to be my last live wrestling show for quite some time, unless I can somehow find a way to get to Shanghai for WWE's first ever show in China. As far as restaurants go, not really. You know, I'm certainly glad that I'm going to Vegas so I can enjoy a couple of last steak dinners, but the place that I'm going to, I think people sort of underestimate how westernized China is at this point, so I'm not really all that concerned about, you know, what kind of food I'm going to be eating. I mean, if I'm really desperate for pizza, there is Papa John's and Domino's and Pizza Hut in China, so I won't die from lack of pizza. But, you know, obviously my diet's going to change, and we'll see how that all is affected. I need to enjoy tap water while I can, because apparently I'm not going to be able to drink tap water. What else do I need? I need to make sure that I get my passport and business visa very soon, hopefully by Monday, because if I don't have those two things, then just like Ethan Page and just like so many Canadian wrestlers, I'm going to be turned away at the border. So I definitely need to get those two things taken care of. And that's pretty much it for the questions. I want to thank everybody for sending them in. And I want to thank everybody for their continued support of this website here, pwponderings.com. It is important to note that this is going to be my last podcast for a few weeks, hopefully. If I could get things working in China, this will be my last podcast. Until hopefully around September, the middle of September. If not, you might not hear my voice until January. For some of you, that will be a relief. But I really want to thank everybody who continues to support the weekly newscast and this website. And please continue to do so, whether it's Chris hosting or whether it's Kevin hosting, Brian, Sierra, all the great people. These last 8 months have not been easy for me. But one of the things that, especially in those first couple months after what happened in the middle of January, the things that really got me through those tough times was wrestling, being able to watch wrestling, talking to people on Twitter. And I know wrestling Twitter kind of gets a bad rep, but it was the best thing for me to be able to interact with people and to talk to people. And then meeting so many wonderful people at the SCI and having Kevin Ford and Chris Chiesti as friends. You know, not just people who run a website together, but as real-life friends means so, so much to me. And I am forever grateful for their support. And obviously, so many of my friends have been supportive of me these last 8 months. But, you know, at this point in my life, I'm 31 years old. I'm going to be starting my first full-time job in a couple of weeks in a completely new country that I've never, ever been to. And I'd be lying if I saying I wasn't both excited and nervous to do this. But I am a firm believer that I have spent a lot of time looking for something. I don't know if I'm going to find it in China. But I can tell you that I have not necessarily found it here. And I look forward to going on an adventure in Shaoxing, China, from September until December. And then again from February until June. So that's pretty much where I'm at. I talked for 40 minutes. I don't know how I did that. So thank you all for listening. Have a good night. Enjoy the graps.